This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to hour number two of Ron Segi Today, live nationwide and around the world. And my first guest who's been on our show in the past is probably the premier presidential historian. I love when she's here, Doris Kearns Goodman. Now, there has been a lot of turmoil when it comes to what's happening in the world, and we thought we'd bring Doris on to talk about a book that she has. She recently wrote it called Turmoil, and that talks about a lot of things that have happened in the Teddy Roosevelt administration, Franklin Roosevelt, also the Abraham Lincoln and the Lyndon Johnson administration, and how it applies to today's political scene. Then later on, from ABC's The Bachelor, Ben Higgins, and then we'll chat about safety on school buses, most important with Tucker Perkins. And that's coming up the second hour with Ron Segi Today.
I used to hate the worn-out plastic mat under my office chair. It dented and cracked, and it was uncomfortable to roll on. And then I found the premium alternative, a glass chair mat by Vitraza. I liked it so much, I bought the company. I'm George Pardo, president of Vitraza. Our glass chair mats are made of super strong glass and protected with a nanotech coating, so you'll always get a smooth, easy glide. And they're beautiful. Tired of replacing plastic mats? I promise, this is your last chair mat. We give you a lifetime warranty. Comfort, style, durability. A Vitraza glass chair mat will completely transform your workspace, home office, or office. Order online at Vitraza.com. That's V-I-T-R-A-Z-Z-A.com. We stock 18 popular glass chair mat sizes, and shipping is free. Get the look you deserve and get 10% off any glass chair mat with promo code George at Vitraza.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn. John and Chelsea Jubilee with Energized Health are regular guests on my show, sharing their breakthrough science of intercellular hydration. The results? People lose fat fast while still eating many of the foods they love. You can too. Plus, supercharge your energy, boost your immune system, look and feel years younger. It's all simple and natural without painful exercise. How do I know? Because I've been on the program since November, and I lost 25 pounds of inner body fat in just the first 3 months and gained 10 pounds of muscle. But don't just take my word for it. Go to EnergizedHealth.com and check out hundreds of amazing testimonials. For all of the details, click on the red button, watch the masterclass. It's free, or cut to the chase. Just join right now at 888-444-8895. Toll free, 888-444-8895. Mention WAR and get 40% off. Go now to EnergizedHealth.com, 888-444-8895, EnergizedHealth.com.
We are back live all across the USA and around the world. You are listening to Ron Segi Today. And after all the talk that there has been in the news of late about how the president ended the war in Afghanistan, we thought we'd call in our next guest talking about how presidents handle things in turbulent times. As she has written several books, seven in fact, is the one I have in my hand, called Leadership in Turbulent Times. She is the renowned premier presidential historian and Pulitzer Prize winning author. Joining us right now is Doris Kearns Goodwin. Doris, welcome to the show. At last we get a chance.
Thank you. Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's been a pleasure. And I got to tell you something. I went through this book like a surgical knife through butter. And as I mentioned to you in the before we went on the air, I have a replica of the Oval Office in my home and just acquired the Resolute Desk. So you can see how kind of a fanatic I am.
That is pretty incredible. Wow, I've got to see that someday.
I would love to have you over to break bread, sit in that office, and talk to you. But let's talk about
this
book.
It's a deal.
I had to put down the President's Club to start reading this, okay? This book is put into four themes, okay? Before public life, life crisis, life in the White House, and then the review of how the presidents that you discuss in this book handled the crisis. But why these presidents at this time? And the presidents, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about is T.R., Teddy Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, Abraham Lincoln, and Lyndon Johnson.
Well, these were the four presidents that over five decades of studying the presidency that I felt I knew the best. So it may seem strange that Lyndon Johnson was in the other three, but I thought if I focused on domestic politics that he absolutely deserved to be. And what happened is when I finished Teddy and Taft, and I was trying to figure out, okay, which president do I do now? And each time I would move from one to the other, I would feel like I was leaving an old boyfriend behind. I'd feel guilty because I'd have to move that guy's books out, bring the next guy in. So I thought, well, what if I just look at my four guys again that I knew the best and contrast their strengths, look at their weaknesses, see what family resemblance of traits there were, and talk about leadership, which is what I've been interested in since I was a grad student at Harvard. And it turned out to be a great project. And Turbulent Times was chosen as the title because it was the turbulent times they each one lived in. I couldn't have predicted that it would be so relevant as it is when it finally came out.
Well, isn't that the truth? Now, as you alluded to, you have written books about all four men, and basically this is centering on how they handled crisis. Now, you have two Republicans and you have two Democrats, and you say that Abe was, of course, a big crisis, the threat of democracy, and that, of course, was huge. T.R. settled the coal strike. You have Franklin Roosevelt, who was involved with the coming out of the Depression and going into World War II, and, of course, LBJ, who is referred to as a prairie dog lawyer, but he turns around and he does a great job in the domestic front, but a terrible job on the international front. So these are the big items of each of those individuals, right, Doris?
Correct. And, you know, the thing you said at the beginning is true, too, that in the early part of the book, I start off when they're just running for office for the first time, in part because I want to show their vulnerabilities and their mistakes and the arrogance and how they learn as they grow older, because I think young people thinking about leadership on the presidential level, they'll think, oh, these people are in Mount Rushmore. They, you know, how can I identify with that? That's what a college student had said to me one time. So that's the early part. And then each one of them goes through a very personal crisis that I think once you've gone through something really difficult, Lincoln had a near suicidal depression,
mm-hmm.
and he came out of it only because he said, you know, I haven't done anything yet to make any human being remember that I've lived. He had such a terribly terrible early life. FDR had, of course, the polio attack that left him a much more empathetic man. Teddy lost his wife and his mother on the same day, and the same house went to the Badlands, and that experience made him a Westerner as well as an Easterner. And LBJ had a massive heart attack in his 40s and comes out of it saying, if I died now, what would I be remembered for? And then they get thrown on the stage where a huge crisis is going to be involving them. But they've been through something before. They've seen resilience. They've known as long as they can learn from it, they're going to be able, hopefully, to have the confidence to get through the next phase.
But I found interesting, though, all four men, although later, and of course Monday morning quarterback is one thing, but later in life we realized that they all had, as you said, fragile beginnings. I mean, Lincoln certainly had his problems dismissing the major hurdles, but he had his own personal problems. Roosevelt, T.R., here's a man that was a tough guy. I mean, he was shot and went on with a speech. I mean, you talk about a guy that, you know, was
right.
a tough cookie. There's no doubt about that. In the case of Franklin Roosevelt, his own partners in his law firm were not impressed by him, and certainly LBJ always had that, and you would know this better than anybody, always had that complex of not being, you know, from a Harvard or Yale. He was from a, you know, a teacher's college in Texas. So they didn't really come out of the chute looking like they're going to do what they did, but then developed into it.
I think that's really important for people to understand. I mean, even as you suggest with FDR, when he was 28, he was not considered, you know, a very good student at any of the schools he'd been in. He wasn't even being a good partner or young intern in the law firm where he was. And then they come in to him and ask, would you like to run for a Democratic seat in Dutchess County? And he immediately says yes. And once he gets on the campaign trail, he knows this is what he wants to be. One of the things that combines all of them, at some point, there's a voice within, this philosopher William James said, that tells you, this is what I want to be. And then you somehow kick into motion, into gear. But even then, he wasn't a great speaker at first. You know, Eleanor said that she was there at the time, that he would somehow pause so long between sentences, FDR did in that first run, that you thought he was never going to go on. But then after a while, when he got more confident, you thought he'd never go off the stage.
Mm-hmm.
But you watch them when they're still developing. And I think it just gives people an idea, not just as political leaders, but as leaders in any field, as long as there's the humility to understand where you've gone wrong and acknowledge your errors and grow, you can become a much better leader than you were at the start.
I think one of the problems, and this is just my personal opinion, with the leadership today is no one reads about the leadership of yesterday. And I think that's where a problem. You know, my mantra has always been, you can't figure out things today or tomorrow if you're not knowing what happened yesterday, because it kind of repeats itself in some way, shape, or form. You know, the other thing...
Oh, you're speaking something that matters so much to me. I mean, I think that's really right, that what's interesting about these four guys is that Lyndon Johnson's hero was Franklin Roosevelt.
Right.
And he really had met him when he was young, but he had read about what he'd done. He knew about it. And then Franklin's hero was Teddy Roosevelt.
Right.
Teddy read about Abraham Lincoln during this whole summer of this coal strike. He read the 7 or 8 volumes that Nicolay and Hay, and he got solace from knowing the difficulties Lincoln had been through. And then Lincoln's hero was George Washington.
Right.
So they all knew about the persons before, and history is such an important way for you. Don't start these things alone. People have been through these things before, and you can learn from them.
Absolutely, and I think that's what's missing in the politics today. You know, and TR and LBJ came into this office of presidency actually the same way. I mean, they were vice presidents when the president was assassinated. But for some reason, and maybe it's because of the media today, for some reason I seem to think, after reading the book, that the LBJ way that he got in was more shocking to the nation than Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I mean, obviously, McKinley was assassinated, as was John Kennedy. But I think the difference is that with John Kennedy, the people watched in real time the murder of John Kennedy and the murder of Lee Harvey Oswald. It was part of that saturation of the difference in television versus hearing that McKinley had been assassinated and then he didn't die right away. But I think there's no question that the country was convulsed by that change with JFK. And LBJ's great benefit was that he was able to go up to that Congress and talk about healing and talk about civil rights as the way, the first priority, which was a hugely risky thing for him to do, because that was the bill that was stuck in the Congress when John Kennedy was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And he deserves, before the Vietnam War took over, enormous credit for having brought Republicans and Democrats together for all that 89th Congress. It was incredible what they did. Aid to education, Medicare, Medicaid, you know, aid to the cities, voting rights, civil rights. It changed the foundation of modern America. And part of it was that after JFK was killed, and there was a sense of hate having been part of that, people wanted to come together in order to show that we weren't that kind of a country, where you could have, you know, what Oswald did and what people's reaction to it was.
Doris, we're going to pause for a second, take a quick break. We'll be right back with our very special guest, Doris Kearns Goodwin. As I mentioned in the introduction, the premier presidential historian. She has written books about several U.S. presidents, and in this latest effort, she has combined 4 of those presidents, Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, and LBJ, in a book that is entitled Leadership in Turbulent Times. And Doris Kearns Goodwin and I will return with another segment live all across the USA and around the world with Ron Sedgie today.
In the last 12 months, the Federal Reserve has added over $4 trillion to their balance sheet. It's led to an explosion in financial assets. Stocks, bonds, commodities, cryptocurrencies, housing prices have all exploded higher. But the Federal Reserve can't keep this going forever. This is unsustainable. It's why you need Advantage Gold. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver the right way. Call 800-900-8000. We don't pay celebrities millions of dollars. We pass that value on to you. It's why we're number one. Call 800-900-8000 now. Speak with one of our experts and learn how. We'll send you a free gold kit and a copy of my national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call 800-900-8000 now.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to mysolarbackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's mysolarbackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at mysolarbackup.com.
As a mother, you don't want to have to worry about this bill is coming, but then she needs this chemo. That's a decision you shouldn't have to make.
It's a huge burden lifted financially, and so it allows you to give singular focus to your child. I've never known a hospital that takes care of their patients so thoroughly.
That was the first thing I was like, how are we going to do this? When they told us that we didn't have to pay a single bill, I was like, wow. They pretty much have saved us.
It's like the world has been lifted off of your shoulders, and now your focus is supporting this child.
There is not another hospital like St. Jude. The patient care is unmatchable. It saved my life. It saved my daughter's life. It saved our family.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
We're back with Ron Sedgy today in another segment with the premier presidential historian, Doris Kearns Goodwin. Her new book is out right now, Leadership in Turbulent Times. And say something that I find extremely interesting. You say that Teddy Roosevelt, I keep on saying TR because Nixon used to use that rendition of reference to him. He would handle today's media better than the other three gentlemen.
Yeah, I think if we needed somebody to come back today, Teddy knew what it was like to be the center of attention. He was the bride at the wedding and the baby at the baptism and the corpse at the funeral. So he could capture everybody. He has a pithy statements that could be on Twitter, speak softly and carry a big stick. You know, don't hit until you have to and then hit hard. He even gave Maxwell House the slogan, good to the very last drop. But more importantly, he understood that the country was divided during the Industrial Revolution, that workers were feeling cut off from the capitalists, that people in the country were feeling cut off from people in the city, and that they were blaming immigrants. And he was able to talk about a square deal for the rich and the poor, the capitalist and the wage worker. And he did it with fire and with cartoon quality. I mean, media would lap him up today, but he'd be fighting for a broader cause, and I think that's what would make him probably the best of the four for today's world.
And don't forget the teddy bear.
And don't forget the that's how popular he was.
Yeah.
He goes on a hunt. They make him try and kill a bear because he hadn't gotten a bear, and he refuses to, and suddenly the bear becomes a cartoon, littler and littler bear, and Teddy's saying no, and teddy bear becomes the most popular toy in American history.
Isn't that something? All people at some point or another needs to feel loved. These four gentlemen needed to feel loved. I do think that Franklin Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson probably had that feeling more so than the first two presidents.
I think that's right. I mean, I think that certainly Lyndon Johnson did.
Yes.
In the end, it comes from a lack of confidence. You know, that I think he had had parents, Lyndon Johnson did. His mother adored him when he was little, but then when he didn't do well in school, she seemed to break away from him. So he thought that the way to get people's love was to do something, to accomplish something, and that's an endless trait. I mean, you can never succeed enough if that's what you're basing people's feelings of love for you on. FDR had a certain kind of internal confidence from the time he was young, but he really had a charming desire whenever he met somebody to make that person like him. And sometimes he would even agree with them when he didn't really agree at all, to not have contention in the meeting. Never thought about what you said, but I think that's right. I think Lincoln and Teddy were less probably than FDR and LBJ in terms of needing that manifestation of having won somebody over when they meet them.
And I think from a standpoint of economics, Abraham Lincoln and LBJ, they were both prairie dog lawyers and really made money later on in life, although I don't think Lincoln was ever really that big. But there was a great deal of money made by Lyndon Johnson through a lot of broadcast holdings and some questionable investments over the years. Those two probably in the beginning were most alike. I've always been fascinated, not only how you became interested in presidential history, how you became so close to Lyndon Johnson. I could go on for days about that. You're only 24 years old, a student at Harvard, and you were selected to join the Fellows of the White House. And here you are in a dance floor in the White House, and you had been very vocal about the removal of LBJ from office with an article in the New Republic. You were against the Vietnam War, yet Lyndon Johnson picks you out of a crowd and says, I want that girl to be in the White House because I can win her over. If anybody can, I can. What went through your mind when you heard that?
No, I mean, you told the story exactly right. I mean, I had written this article before the dance in the White House to celebrate my having become a White House fellow with the other fellow 16 of us, but it came out in the New Republic after the dance. And once it said how to remove Lyndon Johnson in 1968, I was sure that was the end of my White House fellowship. But he did say, as you suggest, bring her down here for a year. And I never fully understood, you know, why he had done that. I mean, I think it was partly because I loved listening to him, and I ended up going to the ranch and helping him on his memoirs. He told great stories, many of which weren't true, but they were great nonetheless. It was partly because I was young, partly maybe because I was a woman, so he might not have thought of me as judgmental as I might have been, but he knew I was going to become an historian, so that mattered to him, that it was the Harvards of the world that would be getting to know him. But it was the most extraordinary experience that I probably ever had. It's what made me a presidential historian. My PhD was in Supreme Court history, so I would have been studying people in their robes rather than these presidential characters. So I'm really grateful that I had that experience, and I took it for granted when I was young. Now I keep thinking, oh, all these things I wished I'd asked him, because I was there day after day after day in the ranch. We got to know him really well, and he was so sad in those last years that he wanted to talk about the times that were good. So we would talk about the New Deal times, we'd talk about the civil rights stuff, and that's what I was working on in the memoirs, was the civil rights chapters and his relationship with Congress. We had split up the memoirs, so it may be that that's why he wanted me to be there. It wasn't talking about Vietnam all the time.
Very unusual individual, no doubt about it, warts and all. In fact, I remember Jack Valenti's book.
Oh, Jack Valenti, of course.
Yeah, Jack Valenti's book was fascinating because he says, you know, the guy did things in public he wouldn't do in private.
And exactly. Yeah. He was a colorful character, the most interesting political figure I think I've ever met. Real force.
Was it difficult to stave off his advances? Because you've talked about that candidly.
Well, the thing that was interesting was that I was always talking to him about steady boyfriends, even when I didn't have them at all, because I knew he had a minor league womanizing reputation.
Mm-hmm.
But everything was working perfectly until one day he said he wanted to discuss our relationship, which sounded ominous when he took me to the lake, conveniently called Lake LBJ. Wine, cheese, red check tablecloth, all the romantic trappings, and he sorted out Doris more than any other woman I've ever known, and my heart sank. I thought, oh, my God. And then he said, you remind me of my mother.
Oh.
It was pretty embarrassing. So who knows what that meant? But, no, I mean, luckily, he had wanted me to go down there and work full time, and I knew how powerful he was, and that if I left Harvard and went there full time, that then I wouldn't have the power to withstand him, not just sexually, but just as a person,
sure,
really.
Sure.
So I said I'd like to work part-time, and I'll come down on Christmas vacations and summers from teaching at Harvard. And at first he said, no, it's all or nothing, and I thought that was it. And then the last day he was in the presidency, he called me and said, all right, part-time. And I think that's what gave me the strength, because I knew I'd be going back, that I was coming and going and not in his presence the full time. Turned out, thank God I did it. It would have been an enormous loss.
Yes, it would have.
I hadn't gotten to know him, because it helped every other book that I've ever written to be empathetic about these other people as I learned to be about him.
All four presidents died. Do you agree they died with the attitude that they unfinished their biggest challenge?
Oh, without a question. And Lincoln knew that Reconstruction was the biggest challenge that had to be faced, and he was just beginning to face it. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt died hoping that he would get into the presidency again in 1920 because there were things left unfinished.
Right.
And FDR knew that the most important thing was what to do after the war for the peace. And LBJ, of course, knew there was more to do on civil rights. So, yes, absolutely.
This is a must-read. It's called Leadership in Turbulent Times, done by the best, Doris Kearns Goodwin. Doris, can I tell you that this has been a very big honor for me, and I hope that one day you can come back, and even more importantly, visit me in Orlando and see my Oval Office.
I would love to. It is a promise on my part, and if it's a deal on yours, it's made.
It's made. Great. And thank you for doing this.
I loved it. There's not even a question. It was great.
Okay. Thank you, Doris, and we'll look forward to having you back, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Doris Kearns Goodwin has been our guest, presidential historian. And there's more to come with Ron Segi today.
For over 20 years, Extendivite has been helping people. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. Glad I found this product. I am 51 years old and started getting headaches a couple of times a week. I went to the doctor and my blood pressure was a little high at around 150 over 95. I found out about Extendivite and I ordered some to try it. Immediately, I felt better, and it lowered my blood pressure and my headaches went away almost instant.
I have been taking it now for about 4 months, and I am so glad I found this product. You won't be disappointed. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
But this is about disparate treatment.
That's one of the organizers of the Justice for J6 rally, which is wrapping up near the Capitol. They've protested the treatment of hundreds of suspects in the January attack on Capitol Hill. There was sturdy fencing up again around the Capitol building, as well as the Supreme Court, and a very heavy police presence. In fact, the National Guard was staged nearby, but they were never needed, at least not so far, and the crowd is heading home. Environmental and animal rights groups both blasted the Department of the Interior's decision to allow a bison hunt in Grand Canyon National Park. The park system says it authorized it because the bison population has grown so rapidly it's harming the environment. Organizations are arguing in a letter that that region is natural bison territory, making them native and non-invasive to the area. And this is USA Radio News.
What will you do if there's a sudden food shortage? Given recent headlines, it seems likely, and at any moment. That's why it makes common sense to build your emergency food storage supply now, while you still can. Do it with the kind of food that stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Food that doesn't go bad like what you get at the grocery store. Whose food should you trust? The largest preparedness company in America, My Patriot Supply. We've served millions of American families going on 14 years. At MyPatriotSupply.com, our mission is your survival. Our emergency food could definitely be your lifesaver when the peanut butter hits the fan. Choose from dozens of delicious meal kits that provide over 2,000 calories a day, which is what your body needs. Order today, and your food will ship fast in unmarked boxes to protect your privacy. Don't wait. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com, keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
Eating, working, living pain-free. These are things many of us take for granted. But for many adults with disabilities who are elderly or have serious medical issues, dental care is simply unaffordable. Dental Lifeline Network is looking for dentists who can change this. DLN is asking dentists and their teams to volunteer to just see one of the many patients in need. You can literally change a life. When you volunteer with DLN's donated dental services program to C1, you treat a pre-qualified patient in your office at your convenience. We handle the details so you can focus on the care. Lack of dental care can lead to the inability to have life-saving surgery, eat, or contribute to our community. If you are a dentist or know a dentist, please share this message. Will you see one? Visit willyouseeone.org to help change one life in your community today.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
Today, live all across the USA and around the world, our next guest is certainly no stranger to our listeners because he is well known for season number 20 of the ABC giant hit, of course, The Bachelor. He's gone on to do a lot of things, including a release of a brand new book that's out right now. I have it in my hands, called Alone in Plain Sight. Joining us right now is Ben Higgins. Hi, Ben. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Ron, thanks for having me. I'm doing really well today. It's been a wild 24 hours with the release of this book, but I'm holding up.
Well, that's good. Well, at least it's out there now, and all of your efforts are coming to fruition. You know, we talk about the Bachelor, and I got to ask you this before we talk about the book, and a fascinating book, too, I might add, is that when I watch that, the first thing that comes to my mind, whether it's The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, is how do you get, because I'm in the entertainment business, television, radio, how do you get a cast of people who automatically fall in love within like a six-week period? How is that done? I know in real life, I mean, that happens, you know, the old love at first sight thing, but how does that happen? It's like falling in love with one of your coworkers after a while, which I've done too on occasions.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. The casting team are pretty good at what they do, but the other thing is, I always say, you know, it's the environment that you're put in. You're put in this environment where it's competitive. You obviously don't want to go home early for own personal pride and ego reasons, but also because you're interested in the whole experience itself. And then typically the lead, I mean, in most cases, is a great catch. And so you are interested in continuing to date this person. And over time, as everybody else is falling in love and you're on these crazy cool dates and you're getting to know more about the lead themselves, you do. You start to open yourself up to the possibility of really caring for this person. And I think the casting team finds people wanting to find a partner, which isn't everybody's story. You know, not everybody wants to be in a romantic relationship, but these people on the show do. And so as a result, they're pretty open to falling in love as quick as they can.
You know, Ben, but what is, and I find this really interesting, I've been wanting to get a contestant on for a long time of this show, but what is the competition like? I mean, in other words, it's almost like saying you got a guy competing for all the homecoming queens in high school or vice versa when it comes to the football star and the one girl. You're not only trying to have a relationship, but you're trying to compete, and that's tough.
It's hard. You said it really well. It's like, you know, you have all these crazy big personalities, beautiful people walking through to try to date, and you have to kind of sort through it all. What it's like to be on the show, it is competitive because, for me, the best example, you know, I was The Bachelor, but I was also on The Bachelorette, is when you're on The Bachelorette, you're kind of sizing everybody up. You're like looking around the room, you're going, okay, am I better than that person? Am I better looking than that person? Do I have more skill sets than that person? Oftentimes, for me, in my case, I did it. And so then it was like, well, the only thing that's really going to be my differentiator, the thing that makes me stand out, is if she likes me for me. And so you have to try to be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the weird part is you get a lot of extroverts in the show or big personalities because you need to find a way to stand out. And so it's kind of this like rat race. Of all these people always trying to do one up each other. That's the competitive side of it. Inside the house, you always see that people are trying to one up each other. It makes it a really, like, it can make it a really hostile environment, but ultimately, towards the end of the show, it really slows down with that, and it really makes it sometimes a really beautiful environment because everybody's having to be themselves and allow themselves to stand out.
And you don't really know, because you say there's a lot of extroverts there, that if they're falling in love or just want to win the show.
Exactly. I think that's the hardest part. You're sitting there and you're trying to figure out, okay, is anybody here actually in this for me? Like, I don't want to be embarrassed from this experience. I don't want to get to the end and have somebody kind of dump me at the altar or dump me towards the end. And so you're kind of looking at it always as this, hey, what is their intentions here? And especially nowadays with social media, I mean, when I was on the show, social media was just kind of getting started. But that's a huge platform that people get from going on this show. It's massive.
Yeah.
So you have to be careful to make sure you find the one that, you know, not only you connect with, but also they want to be there, not only because they know that, you know, they'll get something out of this when it comes to a platform, but also they aren't against the idea of falling in love.
Well, and the Bachelor girl that you were, you know, connected with and engaged to, Lauren Bushnell, that didn't pan out, obviously. She's now married to a country singer and, I guess, with child, and now you're engaged to another beautiful lady that wasn't part of the show. But you bring a lot of these feelings out in Alone in Plain Sight. And I like some of the things you talked about, the fairy tale view of love, and that culture really, really, you know, has this thing where you're running on the beach and all these other things, and then you got to come to reality and how you handle that. Talk about some of the things you bring up in the book, because you do touch on a lot of love.
Yeah. Well, really what I want to write this book to do is to try to allow the reader to relate with it and relate with my life and the stories of other people's lives. Now, breakups are something, and relationships are something that most people can relate with. And breakups are really hard. And I have a friend going through a breakup right now. And it's destroying him. He's confused. He's hurt. He feels like he's done, that something's wrong with him. And I write about this stuff to hopefully allow the reader to say, okay, I've been there. I felt that way. You know, Ben's gotten through it, and this is how he's gotten through it. Or maybe my buddies have gotten through it, and that's how they've gotten through it. And it's really trying to let people know, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be around some big celebrities. Fame is a weird thing. And the one thing I've realized as I've been around these celebrities is the life that we understand from TV or from social media is not the life they live behind the scenes.
Right.
So I really want to break down the walls of saying we're more alike than we are different. And if you're pursuing this fairy tale, I just want to let you know that there's moments that it feels like a fairy tale. But most of the time, that doesn't exist. So let's share some truth and help everybody know that, like, love is not always running on beach and it's not always roses. It's hard at times, but it also can be really beautiful when done well.
And you also bring up a point which I think is extremely interesting, and that is connection with other people, you say, is essential, and I understand that. But shared pain can collide with two people, even though they're two different worlds apart. And I've seen that to be happening. You know, you talk to somebody, and all of a sudden, they've shared the same situation that was painful to them as it was to you, and all of a sudden, you have a common ground.
When I try to write this book, you know, it's about connection. It's about, again, it's for all those people who feel alone in this world, who feel disconnected, isolated, misunderstood. And I wanted to find the connecting piece to our lives that allowed us all to relate with each other. And yes, we can celebrate each other's joys. We can celebrate each other's successes. It's important to do. However, there's one really common thing that we all have in common. It's that we've all experienced some sort of pain and sorrow. And so if that's a common thread in our lives, then what does it mean to connect through that pain and that sorrow? What does it mean for men and women out there to understand that everybody has a story, everybody's story is worth sharing, and that everybody's story includes some sort of pain? How do we accept that? How do we move within that? How do we recognize that in our own lives so that when pain does kind of surface, how do we process it? And that's really where the book comes from, is understanding that pain is a connecting point for us. It's not always a beautiful connecting point, but it does connect us.
Yeah, I think that's a great book for everyone, because what it does is it shows you are not alone in a very tenuous situation, and that's feeling pain, especially with losing a loved one or a girlfriend or a boyfriend. Tell us about Generous International that you co-founded a couple of years ago, Ben.
Yeah, so I write about Generous in the book a bit, but the idea in short is this. We had a nonprofit that we started 11 years ago. It's a great nonprofit called Humanity Hope United. The focus is on sustainable change in communities around Central America. Well, one of the things that was happening is we had to find a creative way to sustainably fundraise for this organization. So we started Generous International. We sell coffee and apparel online at generouscoffee.com. And then 100% of our profits are donated to nonprofits and social causes that are fighting human-facing injustice around the world. So the cool part is all the owners that put up the upfront capital have agreed that all profits, so on the sale of the company, on the sale of a product, are donated back. So it's really a for-purpose company, and I've been able to lead it for now for 3 years, and it's been an incredible experience. It's been really fun to hear the stories come out of it.
Great. Now, the new book is out now. It's called Alone in Plain Sight. Where can we get it, Ben?
I mean, anywhere right now. You know, it's in your local bookstores. I'm always a big encourager to go to your local bookstores and purchase it. They need the help and support, but also it's online. So you can go to Audible, and you can get your Kindle. You can go to Amazon, Goodreads. It's everywhere online.
Ben, thank you so much for joining us. I urge everybody to get it. It's called Alone in Plain Sight. And please come and visit us again, okay, my friend?
I would love to. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Our guest has been Ben Higgins. He was season 20 of ABC's hit series The Bachelor. He's got a brand new book out called Alone in Plain Sight. And I've always wanted to talk to a bachelor or a bachelorette to figure out what is the incentive to go on that show and have all of your personal feelings so much displayed on national television. Well, we found out a little bit of that puzzle. And there's more to come with Ron Saggi today.
As a mother, you don't want to have to worry about this bill is coming, but then she needs this chemo. That's a decision you shouldn't have to make.
It's a huge burden lifted financially, and so it allows you to give singular focus to your child. I've never known a hospital that takes care of their patients so thoroughly.
That was the first thing I was like, how are we going to do this? When they told us that we didn't have to pay a single bill, I was like, wow. they pretty much have saved us.
It's like the world has been lifted off of your shoulders, and now your focus is supporting this child.
There is not another hospital like St. Jude. The patient care is unmatchable. It saved my life. It saved my daughter's life. It saved our family.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at St. Jude.
Do you have a home that you don't want anymore? We can buy it from you within 24 hours, any home, size, or condition. For over 20 years, we've been buying homes for cash and helping homeowners sell their homes immediately with no listings or strangers walking through your home. Are you moving? Did you lose your job? Going through a divorce? Whatever the reason, if you're in a bind and you know that you need to sell your house fast, call the expert team at I Need to Sell My House Fast. We'll make you a serious cash offer to buy your home in 24 hours and let you walk away from it. No listing, no waiting. Sell any home, any size, any condition, now. Call the expert team at I Need to Sell My House Fast. Make this free call now.
800-475-0092. 800-475-0092. 800-475-0092. That's 800-475-0092.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life Crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCNteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life Crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCNteam.com. Immediately. You're looking for military specialists who can use a computer, can communicate information, and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Across the USA and around the world, you are listening to Ron Sedgie today. Our next guest has been with us before, a couple of years ago. Fascinating individual about a very important subject. We're going to be talking about children. And children, of course, are in the news of late because of all of these pandemic and all these different things with masks and so on and so forth. So we want to keep our children safe. And low-emission buses benefit students because of their safety and their health and the environment. Joining us right now is energy expert and the CEO of PERC, the Propane Education and Research Council, our friend Tucker Perkins. Hi, Tucker. How are you? Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to hear your voice and to be back with you today.
I am in complete agreement with you that propane is probably a heck of a lot better to put in buses versus diesel or even regular gasoline. I have a statistic in front of me I'd like to read before we start, and that is this fall, more than 1.3 million students will ride a propane school bus to school every day, with 22,000 propane school buses on routes today in school districts in 49 states. Very good success on this, but there's a long way to go. And why is this so important?
Well, it's really important, I think, for starters, because it's better for the child. I think, you know, it's healthier for the child, it's better for the school, it's better for the community, and all this talk about the climate, it's better for the environment. I think, I was thinking about this, as long as you've been doing the radio show, kids have ridden to school the same way in these older, aging, dirty diesel school buses. Today we realize that diesel school buses are not only expensive to operate, but they're harmful to the child, they're harmful for the community, and they're bad for the climate, right? We knew there was a better way, that every child deserved to ride to school in this clean, safe, healthy way. And that way is this propane-powered school bus.
I don't mean to make light of it, but when I started this show, Tucker, children went to school in a horse and carriage, just to resolve that, okay? It's been that long. Now, can you take an existing fuel diesel bus and change it to propane, or do you have to buy a new bus?
So we can do that for some other fleets, but in school buses are built to these rigorous federal standards. We're totally supportive of that. So the only way to migrate from diesel to propane school bus is when you actually get rid of those diesel buses and buy a propane school bus. Fortunately, a lot of states have a program to help you get rid of these older, dirty diesel buses. So, but no, it is built to those same federal standards. You know, we work with a lot of fleets that have great cargo, but nowhere do we work with a more precious cargo than the nation's children, the future of tomorrow. And so we take that responsibility with great pride, and we know these modern school buses are not only safer, but they're healthier for the children. But no, we'll do that when we replace those older, dirty diesel buses.
Well, you know, I know this is not your area of expertise, but I hope when they replace them with propane school buses that they also put seatbelts in them. I could never understand that deal. Here you have, as you mentioned, the most precious gems that we could possibly have in this country, and a lot of the buses never had a seatbelt.
Well, you're right, and I wasn't a school bus expert, but I spend enough time now to feel like I am one, and it's a really pleasure to see that school systems migrate so they do have seatbelts. They do have these more modern engines. They also have some electronics on there that can record what children are doing, and in our buses, they're quieter. One of the things we hear often from the drivers is they can hear the students' conversations. They control the buses better. So these modern school buses are not only healthier for the child, quieter, calmer, but they're really better for the community, and they really are safer in every sense of the word.
Somebody might be listening to us and say, well, why do we have to be concerned about it? The student is in the bus. They're not outside the bus. And I don't want to lead anybody to believe that there's leaks on the buses, but is there?
No. In fact, let's be very clear about that. You've been behind a school bus. You've seen a school bus pull away, and you've seen that cloud of black smoke. And if you didn't see it behind a school bus, you've certainly been behind a truck as they pulled away from the stop sign.
Right.
You've seen that cloud of black smoke. We know that black smoke contains things that are bad for the environment, bad for the child, and we know that most school buses don't have air conditioning, so what's outside the bus is in your community and it's inside the bus. These children smell that for the entire duration they're on the bus on the way to school and back. It contains particulate matter. That's a known carcinogen. It contains nitrogen oxide. That's a horrible irritant for your lungs and mine, but even worse for children. Bronchitis, asthma, a whole host of respiratory illnesses. When we move to a propane-powered school bus, that cloud of black smoke is gone. And that's why we're doing this.
Is it more affordable to operate under a propane gas?
One of the beauties of propane school buses is that they cost about half the operating cost of a diesel school bus. Maintenance is less, the fuel costs less, and the school system saves 50%. In fact, we did a study that said if we could convert all of the diesel buses to propane school buses, nationwide would save enough money to hire 23,000 teachers. When we work with UPS, we're able to save them money. We're proud of that. But when you work with a school system, you begin to think about how that money is used, hiring teachers, buying better computers. We literally give the child a healthier ride. We give the community a cheaper cost of operation, and then we deploy that money back into the community in better instruction, better materials. It's a real revolution in student transportation.
How does the propane usage equate with the academic studies? Because there are studies that say that children who ride on these buses have a better chance of learning.
Yeah, George. Georgia State did this study and said riding to school in a low-emission bus, their students tested higher in math and science. Those children were in school more days. Makes sense. They're not homesick with asthma. They're not homesick with bronchitis. They're in school learning. You couple that with what I've seen from traveling around the country and talking with principals and teachers that were over fleet that had gone from diesel to propane. We know that those buses are quieter. We know they're healthier. Now we know they're quieter, and the teachers tell us that the students come into the classroom more eager to learn, settle down faster. And so those two features, a healthier ride and a quieter ride, it comes together to make the child able to learn better, to learn more fully. And it's a wonderful story.
1.3 million students will ride in propane school buses every day. There are 22,000 propane school buses today in operation in 49 states, but there's still room for a lot more, right, Tucker?
It's only 5%. We have a long ways to go before we can rest, and we love to get parents involved here, right? We created a website for parents, betterourbuses.com. Parents have a strong voice, particularly when they link with other parents in asking their school systems, why aren't our children going to school in the safest, healthiest, cleanest ride available to them, while we save money all along? So betterourbuses.com is a place for parents to go to learn what we're talking about, to learn how to ask the right questions and help make their school systems have a cleaner, safer, healthier ride. Ron, thank you.
Tucker, thanks for joining us. It's always nice having you here. We look forward to your return. And again, our guest has been the CEO of PERC, the Propane Education and Research Council, our friend Tucker Perkins, talking about low-emission school buses benefiting not only the environment, but most importantly, the health and the safety of our students. Tucker, nice having you back, and we look forward to having you back soon.
Love hearing your voice, Ron. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to pause for a second. There's more to come with Ron Seggi today.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Deb's constipation with belly pain, discomfort, and bloating kept giving her grief. She talked to her doctor to get some relief. Turns out Deb had irritable bowel syndrome with constipation or IBS-C, which was a start. Saying yes to Linzess helped her do her part.
Linzess, or linaclotide, is a prescription medicine that treats IBS-C in adults. Linzess works differently than laxatives. It lets you have more frequent and complete bowel movements and helps relieve overall abdominal symptoms, belly pain, discomfort, and bloating. These symptoms were studied in combination, not individually. Do not give Linzess to children less than 6, and it should not be given to children 6 to less than 18. It may harm them. Do not take Linzess if you have a bowel blockage. Get immediate help if you develop unusual or severe stomach pain, especially with bloody or black stools. The most common side effect is diarrhea, sometimes severe. If it's severe, stop taking Linzess and call your doctor right away. Other side effects include gas, stomach area pain, and swelling. There could be more to your story with IBS-C. Talk to a doctor today. Say yes to Linzess. Learn more at Linzess.com or call 1-800-LINZESS. Sponsored by AbbVie and Ironwood Pharmaceuticals.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
And censorship continue at their current pace, there will soon be nothing left of the truth. The Epoch Times was founded to keep truth alive. We ask the questions we think you'd ask. We check facts without regards to any political agenda. No one tells us what to cover or how to cover it. We're not influenced by big corporations or political parties. Our great passion is to expose the spread of socialism and communism. We cover the Chinese Communist Party and how it works to subvert American education and politics. We cover big issues like election integrity, the exploding national debt, the fight against coronavirus, and the truth about its origins. We cover Democrats and Republicans in exactly the same way. We have a special trial subscription offer right now. 1 month of our printed paper and total access to our amazing online content for just $1. You'll find it at TrustedNewspaper.com. 1 month, $1. TrustedNewspaper.com. Help the Epic Times keep truth alive.
That's a wrap with Ron Sedgy today. I want to thank you for joining us, and I also want to thank our guests, and they include Ronnie Millsap from Family Affair, Kathy Garver, Walter Koenig, who played Chekhov on Star Trek, Jeanette Kaplan, presidential historian Doris Kearns Goodman, from ABC's The Bachelor, Ben Higgins, and Tucker Perkins. Well, we'll be looking for your company come next week when we are going to do it again live all across the USA and around the world with Ron Sedgy today. Till then, I'm Ron Sedgy, hoping that you have blue skies and green lights.